So to this amazing Maisa, Reb Chaim Kreisvit was the Rav in Antwerp. I remember when he was Nifta, not such a long time ago. He was Rav in Antwerp, he was a very great Rav, the Rav of Antwerp, Reb Chaim Kreisvit. And I remember his Levi very clearly. It wasn't such a long time. Do you remember when he was about Reb Chaim Kreisvit? Maybe, I don't know, it wasn't such a long time ago. And the story goes that before the war, somebody approached him, a gentleman approached him, who told him that he's a wealthy, very wealthy businessman, and he's got a lot of money, and he put all his money in a safe account in Switzerland, of course. Yeah. Exactly. So he said he's amassed a fortune of money over the years, and he's put all the money in his Swiss bank account. And he's quite nervous now because it was just before the war, and the pressure was, the tension and the relationships with, he could see that it's not going the right way. So he said, rather, better safe than sorry, and he's going to put all the money in, he put it in a safe bank account in Switzerland. And the reason why I approached Reb Chaim Kreisvit was because he said, you never know, my yoli yoim, you don't know what happens, and I'm not sure what's going to have this subtle feeling in me that it's not going to go so good. And in case something happens, chas v'sham, something happens to me, these are the details. And that's the password, and here's what you need to know in order to access the bank. Just in case, you should know these are the details, and you should have access to it. I trust you, you're the Rav, you are Elie Chayit, you take the details, if need be, you'll have access to it. And you give it to my closest relative, you inform my closest relative, and you give them all the relevant details, and you go. And indeed, this gentleman was his gut feeling, his instinct was quite right, and he didn't make it through the war. Not only he didn't make it through the war, but his wife and his children and his very close relative didn't make it through the war. Reb Chaim Kreisvit was made aware of this, and he found out, and he therefore realized that he's got these very clear instructions from this gentleman, from this Yid, and he has got instructions to pass on the details to the closest relative, to the Yerish. However, easier said than done, because he was looking for the closest relative of this individual, and he was unsuccessful because he was killed, and his wife was killed during the war, and his children, and his brothers, his sisters. He went to look for his uncles, and wherever he searched, wherever he looked, he couldn't find any closest relative. They all had disappeared and vanished, or they were killed, most of them, and he couldn't find anything. So he said, well, the Gemara says, it's like Oshavas Aveda, so if you can't find the close relative, you keep it on the side, and you wait until Moshe. I'm saying he was looking for the relative, he tried his very, very best, he searched and he researched, but he was unable to locate any close relative, any Yerush. So he said to Moshe, he's going to keep on looking, and he did keep on looking, but in the meantime, he became Rav of Antwerp. This was before he had become, in the pre-war years, he wasn't in Antwerp yet. And after all, he became Rav in Antwerp, and he became a leader of this very, 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 very large Kehillah. And he had a huge amount of responsibilities, and he was Rav in Antwerp. And this was in the 1945, 1947, 1950, 1955, 1960, all the way till the 1970s. Somewhere in the mid-70s, Reb Chaim Kreisvit was really a very famous Rav, and a very famous darshan, and he had a lot of public speech, a lot of commitments, a lot of obligation. He was one of the very great askonim, and he had lots of moistas he was looking after in Yerushalayim and Eretz Yisrael, lots of moistas. He had yeshivas, he had kodalim, he had girls' schools, I believe, and he very frequently traveled to Eretz Yisrael. And at one point, he was asked to speak in a big fundraising event in Yerushalayim, Yerkutsch, for one of his moistas, and he was found in, but he was a little bit early. He was in Eretz Yisrael, in Yerushalayim, about to speak, but he was a half an hour early, that little bit too early before he was going to speak in his public, very public speech. And he finds, what does he do if he's got half an hour spare? He goes, looks for the closest Besmedesh. It's not very hard to find the closest Besmedesh. Instead of wasting his time, he goes to the nearest Besmedesh, pulls out the Gemara, and starts to learn. As he's about to start learning, he finds in his Besmedesh, in Eretz Yisrael, Shalim, Yakodesh, mid-70s. He feels somebody approaching him, and he sits down next to him on his bench. And he notices straight away he's a very, very poor individual, very poor man. And he sees the way his clothing and his shoes, and he's got his plastic bags with a bit of stale food. And he takes him a cup of water in the Besmedesh to drink, and he sees the way he's walking around, and what he's wearing is he's very, very obviously a very exceedingly poor man. And Reb Chaim Kreisvit, in his back of his mind, he knows he's got, well, Antwerp was a very wealthy, is or was very wealthy, had wealthy members of the Kehle, and he had quite a lot of stokemanis that he was looking after. And he was thinking, this poor man, he said, maybe I can help him a little bit. But in order to do so, you need to know a little bit more about him. You need to find out a bit, who is he, what is he, what's his name, why is he poor, what's the story over here. So he approached him and he says, I can see, what's your name, who are you? And this person starts speaking and he tells his name and his family name. He says, well, who's your uncles, your father, who are you? And within minutes, it turns out that he is a nephew no less of this person who had given the bank account details. In other words, he wasn't a poor man. He was actually, in real terms, he was a multimillionaire. He just didn't know anything about it. And then he says, he tells him, you know, I think I've got some news for you. He says, I was about to give you stocker money because I can see you're really needy. But I think instead of that, I'm going to ask you for some maisa. And he says, what do you mean? He says, because you're actually a very wealthy man. And I know it for a fact, because he tells him the story of this uncle, who was his uncle, had left over a huge amount, a fortune in a Swiss bank account. And despite all his researches, he never found out about his nephew, who had been told has been killed during the war. And he tells him the news. And of course, this is quite the life-changing news, that instead of being so poor, he was actually so rich. But the story, you can imagine what the end of the story is. He overnight, you know, collected his money, and it wasn't so difficult to access it. And he became a very, very rich, and a very rich man. And over the last few years of his life, he was very, very rich. And he gave a lot of maisa, and he turned a gvi overnight. And he gave a lot of stockers for the last few years of his life, but he was a very rich man. But this is the end of the story. But Reb Chaim Kazviat took this, and he said there's quite a few incredible messages within that story. Most amazingly is that this is a person who lives for not just 1 week or not just 1 month, but it's one person who lives for years and years with the knowledge, or rather the understanding or the assumption, that he is a very, very poor man. Very poor man. He honestly thought that he was an incredibly poor man, but in reality, for 20 years, he was a multimillionaire without even knowing about his wealth. He didn't know about how rich he was. And for 20 years, he was living like a poor man, but he just didn't know how rich he was. So Chaim Kazviat takes this a step further, and he says, "How often are we exactly the same?" Well, very often that we think we are in a certain place, we don't realize. He speaks about Ruchni. He says that we've got bags and bags of opportunities to do mitzvahs, to learn Torah around us, and we don't access it. We don't access it. Like this individual didn't know anything about it. Sometimes we're a bit unaware how much a person can steig, how much a person can do, how much a person can develop himself. And we think that it's rechoyka mimeni, it's too far, it's too difficult. Ach, this is... Had you asked this person that you're a multimillionaire, we said, I'm a multimillionaire, me, I'm a poor man in the Besmedesh Nirshalayim. And he didn't realize what incredible wealth he really had. It's just about accessing it. It's just about getting there. And obviously this is Reb Chaim Kazviat said the same with us. We're also multimillionaires, we just need to do it. And I thought this is a very powerful message, especially as we are entering the winter months, and we've got such gewaltige opportunities to continue steiging in El Chashabes and to continue, and this is maybe some food for thought. Without further delay, I'm particularly pleased and honored to have got guest speaker tonight, who didn't know anything about it, but some divrei bracha by Rabbi Ketanke, please. Thank you very much. It's fine, now. It's just fine. Thank you very much. It's very not fair to ask him on the spot, but come, Sandy Verbruch. It's about Tashkent, otherwise. We're just doing this.
So nice to see time and Benjamin. Thank you very much for those warm words of wisdom. It's a very special zechus to be here. To say I'm at loss for words is very hard. I was just thinking today that. You know, the Sedra Noach finishes off with Avraham Avinu. Avraham is the end of the Sedra Noach. And the question which is asked on Avraham is, why is it the greatest Kiruv rabbi in the world that ever was, the founder of Kiruv, Avraham Avinu, long before the days of Arsameach, Esha Torah, long before Seed were ever thought of, Avraham Avinu was the Kiruv rabbi par excellence, him and Sarah together, Vayit Eshel, Bever Shava, they had a hotel, a hostel, they used to teach people to say brachas. They used to teach them who made the food, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you have to thank him. They used to teach them about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, open the world's eyes to understanding there's a creator of the world, there's a Baal Abira, there's a creator. And yet, we don't see anything came from any of these parents. What happened to all these people that he was Makarev, all these people, Makurev from Avraham Avinu, one would expect there should have been yeshivas full of them, and they should have had children and grandchildren. He went down with Yaakov to Mitzrayim. I don't know what happened to them. Maybe they stayed in Eretz Yisrael or something. They made yeshivat b'nei Noach. They should have been. Nothing happened. Even Eliezer, Eved Avraham, the great Eliezer, who Avraham trusted right-hand man, we don't hear anything about him after these sedras. He disappears into thin air. And there's a number of answers given to explain this. But I'd like to suggest something which is relevant to our Jewish program. And that is that until the Torah was given, that Avraham Avinu was instilling in all these people the psychology and the thought process and the ideas and the principles of Yiddishkeit. But there was no mitzvahs. There was no mechayev. There was no obligation. It was all theory. There was no practice. When you have a Torah which is taught purely as a theory, purely as an intellectual endeavor, it has no kiyum. This is what you see from the Avodim of Avraham, of all the people, Eliezer of Avraham, all those that Avraham was trying to be Megaya. Avraham Avinu himself had worked through it, and it was deep in his heart, and he kept all the mitzvahs, like Chazal say, he kept even Erev Tavshila and Erev Tuchumin, all the halachas we're going to be learning about very soon, Me'ezah Hashem. But the others, even if they kept it, they didn't keep it as a Mechayev, because they had to keep it. They kept it just like it was a point of interest, a philosophy. It was a philosophy. A philosophy has no kiyum. And therefore, we have a special zechus to be part of this program, because we are fully operative. Not only the philosophies, we're actually acting. We're learning the halachas. Limud amanas lelamed lasos. Limud is in order to keep the halachas and to know what to do and to keep it. What could be better than a wonderful Maggid Shir like Rabbi Emmanuel, who works so hard to prepare? I'm sure it takes many, many hours. It does take hours to prepare something. You have to be prepared for anybody who knows what questions are going to come up. And he tries to make it as exciting as he can with the Piske Achroinim, make it Gishmak. I don't know how he finds the time. It's tremendously Hakmakit Toiv. And as we complete the cycle, Be'ez Hashem, in a few weeks, as I heard, Be'ez Hashem, the Shir Shagam Michael El Choyel. And it's wonderful to see these boys with us every night. It's wonderful, Gevaldik. So nice to have you with us. And thank you for the zuchus of being able to share a few words. But I think really the essence of Dushu is, the essence of the halacha element of Dushu is, Lil Moed Amanas Lekayim, not just philosophy, we're keeping it. When you're keeping it, it is something which you can keep and take with us throughout the winter months. Yeah. Rabbi Patkas, yeah. Thank you. Sure.
Thank you very, very much. Thank you very much. Yeah, I'd like to go over this if we started yesterday. It's such a sadistic if, and as if you dialed, so that's page 298, second line. We started it yesterday, and we started the Mishnah Berurah. We have much more to cover on this, on these points, because really this is the essential yisod of Losh is within this Seif. So let me go through it again, and to add some clarity within the Mishnah Berurah, who we are in Seif Kot Nun. So the Mishnah Berurah says, the Shulchan Aruch says, En Megablin, you do not do gibul, perish and sinas mayim bekemach nikra gibul. Adding water into the flour is considered gibul. We mentioned yesterday that the machlokes rishonim, when are you over on the melacha of Losh? I'm going to do many rishonim, it is when you start kneading. When you actually knead. Makes sense, no? You're over kneading when you knead. However, according to other rishonim, that you're over before that, at a stage of pouring water. And indeed, it looks like the Shulchan Aruch, we are machmir for his opinion, and that's really the words, that's the meaning of the words in those brackets, in brackets of it. That's exactly what Shulchan Aruch is teaching us over here. Then, Megamun Perish Nesinas Mayim Bekerach Nikar Gibul, that yes, you know that even the pouring of the water without actually the kneading process, just the actual fact of adding water to the flour before the creation of the dough, that already is, that's already a melacha according to many poskim. And we're learning now as follows. Megablin perish nesinas ma'am bekemach likagibul. Kemach kolihab, which is the toasted flour that we mentioned yesterday. Shem oyovul olush kemach she'enu koli. Because if you're putting it in the, into this toasted flour, you're adding the water, and there you're oyvon gibul, but only medrabonon. And the reason is because shem oyovul olush kemach she'enu koli. Because if you would be allowed to do that, and you were to add water to this flour, what ends up that you're not going to just do stay there, but you're actually going to add water to kemach she'enoi koli. I'm going to explain that in a minute. Water legabel koli me'at me'at aval tvua, but tvua but produce shelo'i viashlish, which is prior to the third stage of growth. Shekolu oisa, which was toasted and roasted, ve'achkach tachnu oisa tchinogasa, and then it was ground in a mill. And it was done chinagasa. It wasn't fine flour. It was the opposite. What's the opposite of fine flour? What's the word? Coarse. Coarse, how do you spell that?
C-O-A-R-S-E.
Coarse. Pardon? Coarse flour. Then, that's if you've got this chinagasa, this coarse flour, then, says the Shulchan Aruch, that's like sand. V'yanikre shesiso, and that's considered shesiso. So this coarse flour is a bit like like sand. Kechoil, v'yanikre shesiso, that's considered shesiso. That's called shesiso. That muta legabel menu b'choymetz, that, to do gibel with that. To add flour, to add water with that, b'choymetz or vinegar, v'chiyotze v'abba v'asachas, if you do it in one go, v'shirach, and that if it's soft, then that wouldn't be a problem. I'm going to explain that, but first I think we've got to get the concept clear over here. The underlying yisoid of this seif over here is because this is the opinion of the Rambam. And the Rambam has got the opinion that is a very essential difference between something which is a bar gibul and not a bar gibul. And once the Machloek is showing me exactly what the difference is. But we've got over here what the Rambam holds. The opinion of the Rambam is that there's a difference between Bar Gibbol and not Bar Gibbol. I would like to explain this with the words of the Mishnah Berurah. Now, if you look inside, we went through it yesterday, but we stopped by this very point. But when you see there's a 77, the Dershon note 77, after this is word for Kolzeh. And that's what I would like to read now, because that's really the yesod. For kolze, and all this that we're discussing, his bekemach is regards to flour, off of a tit, for choil, hadak. We will call that nowadays soft or fine flour. Tehu bar gibul. This is what it is considered bar gibul. For chol chiyotze bazen, similar to that. That is bar gibul. If it's something which is similar to flour, soft and fine flour, that's bar gibul. Avol, but dovoshu lav bar gibul, something which is not bar gibul, i.e., could go in eifer v'choy lagas, something which is coarse. That's the perfect word, which is more harsh and not so fine. And das Rambam, the opinion of the Rambam is it's v'siatoi da'af im gibloi, even if you are kneading it. And you are adding water, and you are needing potu, this will only be with rabbonon. It's potu mechatos v'rak isur ekeitz, only in isur rabbonon. So the Rambam holds that when you are talking about the kneading, which is the raisa, that is only when you are adding flour and kneading something which is a soft element. But what happens then? What happens if you have got fine flour and you're adding water to it? What happens then? It binds together. And it becomes a beautiful dough. A nice, good dough. What happens if you add flour to sand? So would you add water to sand? Or to flour which is coarse and it's not so fine? What happens then? It's very different, right? It doesn't actually become a doughy substance. But what happens is it becomes, how do you describe it?
Mushy,
that's the word. It becomes mushy, and it doesn't actually become a substance, which is a doughy substance. It becomes something which is not completely, it's not a merged unit. It's not a beautiful unit of one dough, but rather what it is, it's like a combination of water with flour. It becomes one kind of, it becomes mushy. So that's really what the Rambam holds, that when you're talking about lisha, losh, min ha-toira, when you're talking about the issa de reisa of kneading, that's only if it becomes the former, if it becomes like a dough. Losh means kneading into dough. But if it becomes something which is like of a substance which hasn't formed into a single unit, that the Rambam holds that is not Madaraisa, that's only Madrabonon. Hence, now we can appreciate the simple words of the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch said that if you're adding, that's the difference between Gibul and, like, Lav Bar Gibul, and yes, Bar Gibul. Bar Gibul literally means the son of a kneading substance. And what it means is that something becomes a dough. Something becomes a dough. That's Bar Gibul. If something which is Lav Bar Gibul, that means that something will never become dough. Why is it also? Let's ask a question. According to the Rambam, if it's really not becoming a dose, why isn't Issa Darabonon when it's Lav Bar Gibul? If we're understanding now, we've now understood properly what it means to do a melacha of losh. That it's, if it's Bar Gibul, and you're actually creating a dough, okay, I'm hearing now, that's the Raisa, okay, very good. But if that's the case, now, so why is it, if it's a Lav Bar Gibul, if it's not becoming a single unit of a dough? So if, then why is it also in the first place? It shouldn't be melacha. It shouldn't be melacha. So the answer to that is, it's a gzeira. That's right. A perfect, very conventional, beautiful, straightforward gzeira. And the gzeira is that if you're going to use something which is lav bar gibul, you're adding water and you're kneading something which is lav bar gibul. Tomorrow, what are you going to do? You're going to do the same with a proper bar gibul, and then you're going to be over on the deraisa. And Chachamim also siog ledivrayim, and they made the takona like they made takona in so many other places, and that's why lav bar gibul is awesome at Rabban. This is the opinion of the Rambam. Many Rishonim hold exactly the other way around, but this Shulchan Aruch is a quotation of the Rambam, and that's what we need to understand it. So I'm just going to go over the words briefly, just the first two lines, just to explain that, just to see it in the words of Shulchan Aruch again. In Megablin, we're not allowed to do Gibul, Kemach Koli Habe, with the toasted flour, which is coarse. Thank you so much, Rabbi Yossel, for the word. Shemo Yovole Lolush Kemach She'enu Koli, because if you're going to end up doing that, you're going to end up with something which is Enu Koli. Humote Legabel is a Koli Miat Miat. Haval Tvush Eloi Vioshlech, but if you've got something which is very harsh, then I'm just skipping a few words. Tzarei Kechoil, that's like sand. Vionikir Shesisa, that's Shesisa. And that would, in principle, be Mutah. Now let's see the words of the Mishnah Berurah here again. I just want to emphasize it because that's so essential and so interesting. Because of the kemach or offer with it, the choil adak do bar gibul, the choil it's a man, aval bedova shu lav bar gibul, kion eifer, the choil agast, as rambam, the siatoi, tafim gibul, I potum, the chatos, like isu eke, with as habri shenim lepach, many shenim all the other round, the bedova, the lav bar gibul, after rebuysi, rebuyuda, lav boy gibul, umishinosen, but maim chayv de zeo gibul. Okay, that's the understanding of here. Before proceeding, I want to just take the opportunity of asking a question here, which is so interesting, and that's the bottles. I think we may have mentioned the baby bottles already, but I don't know if we did, but it's really essential because now we can, I think, appreciate the question even more. Why are you allowed to make a baby bottle on Shabbos? Assuming that you are. We are allowed, right? So you're taking this flour, and what are you doing? You're adding hot water to it, right? Is that how we do it? Okay, now leaving out the bishul shail of kala bishul, leaving all this out. Assuming there is no bishul. Okay, let's assume there is no bishul. So why are you allowed to take hot water and pour it into this baby bottle, which has got this baby formula in it? Oh, why is it? What do you mean loose? It's too liquid. Very interesting. So what you're saying now is absolutely correct, but it's actually a big chiddush. The Pshalom Zalman says that. The Pshalom Zalman has this chiddush that whenever we talk about meleches losh, we talk about kneading, by definition, it's about creating something which is going to be a dough. If you're creating something which is a liquid, that it does not include in the melacha. It's a bit of a chiddush, and I don't know if there's a mekoros l'shonim for that. But Pshalom Zalman takes it as a pshitus that if you are creating a liquid and you're not creating a dough, you're not over on the melacha. Hence, there is no question at all with regards to making this liquid at all. But we need to remember that it's against a chiddush, and it's quite a chiddush to say that, which I think is the minhag olam, and that's what. But as long as you're actually creating a dough, the very same action you're doing over here will actually be included in melachas losh, and you'll be able to do it. Okay, Rabbi Issa, this is for this evening. We'll discuss this further tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. I'd like to thank very much again Rabbi Ketanke for the spontaneous Divrei. See, he was told about this Divrei Brocha at the same time than you. So so thank you very much for this. Very, very nice. Okay. Fine. Good evening, Rabbi Issa, and good Chodesh to all.